a primer in defending your property rights. Next on Principles and Policies. Welcome to the Saturday edition of Principles and Policies. I'm your host, Barry Sheets, the Executive Director of the Institute for Principle Policy. Along with me today, as usual, is my Vice Chairman, our co-host, fellow analyst, and very good friend, Chuck Michaels.
Another day in the remote studio talking with Tom DeWeese.
That's right. Tom DeWeese, President of the American Policy Center, that's AmericanPolicy.org, has been our guest over the last couple of programs as we've been talking about an issue that is near and dear to all of us, the enjoyment of our personal property. But the big problem is there are many people, powerful people, people who are sitting in the seats of government who don't want you to be able to enjoy your private property because somehow, some way, your enjoyment of private property is damaging the planet. And they use terms like sustainability and green space and biodiversity, and it just the list goes on and on of all of these wonderful, high-sounding words that really mean one thing: tyranny. Tyranny over you, over your private property, over the decisions you make as an individual or as a family. Tyranny that's geared toward turning a free country into a socialist or communistic paradise, ultimately. Tom, you've been with us for the last couple of shows. Welcome back. We appreciate having you. And today we want to talk about specifically how's Agenda 21, which we mentioned yesterday, being implemented locally. Because we talked about it being top-down and how it was driven with the money. But the implementation goes the exact opposite direction. They want it implemented as local as possible so that it builds from there. So in other words, the buck's stopping with your local elected officials.
If you ask your local officials, you go in and talk to them about these programs, and they'll tell you this is just all locally driven. It's just a local idea. They're just trying to make things better for the local community. We hear it on and over and over and over again. And as I described yesterday, these NGO groups, that the Sierra Club, the Nature Conservancy, groups like the International Council for Local Environmental Initiatives, ICLEI. ICLEI helped write Agenda 21, as did Sierra Club and Nature Conservancy. And they know exactly what the agenda is. They know exactly what their goal is, what they want to accomplish. And they start on the international level and writing these things. They go down through the federal government, down to the state government. And your local elected officials, they may be good guys who just got involved in government to, you know, just do good things. And when they get in there, the first thing that happens is they're probably sent off to either, you know, your mayor is sent off to the National Conference of Mayors, your governor is sent off to the National Governors Association, your county commissioners go to their national association, your city councilmen go to their national association. What do they hear from the podium there? The same NGO groups that helped write the thing in the first place, the same policies coming down, they're given sample legislation, they're guided every step of the way. They come home and the local chapter of those same groups is surrounding them at home. And so they begin to think, well, this is a proper role of government. This is how government should operate. And I'm just learning here. I'm new at this. I'm just learning. And so then along comes somebody and says, you know, I heard this guy Tom DeWeese talking about these crazy things. And they go, oh, come on. No. This is just local stuff, and we're just trying to take care of it. So I get pointed a tinfoil hat and told I'm, you know, spreading a conspiracy theory. And that is what we hear in town after town after town. But the truth of the matter is this is how it operates. And they have this agenda. The state legislature, through the pressure of these groups, passes laws that say the local community has got to do a comprehensive development plan. That's the thing to listen for, a comprehensive development plan. What does that mean? That means that the community government is going to put together guidelines that will control property development, it will control energy use, it will control water use, it can control what kinds of businesses can come into the community, on and on and on. Farmers controlled on, you know, using water on their property, using chemicals in growing their crops, how much energy they use for it, sustainable farming we're hearing about. Something else you will hear about in the communities a lot, particularly rural communities, are conservation easements.
Yes.
on the lands. Now, this is sold to farmers are oppressed. That, you know, they have a very difficult time now making a living with a family farm because so many of our products now, because of NAFTA and GATT and some of these international agreements that our government has gone into that supposedly was going to make things better for us, suddenly means that you've got fruit coming from Mexico or South America, all this horde of products that are coming from China, So American manufacturing is disappearing, and the family farm is disappearing. And I've never met a farmer in my life who didn't want to keep the family farm at all costs. They love it. They love the way of life, and it means something to them. So somebody comes along and says, hey, we can get you tax breaks. We can maybe even get you some money, some kind of grant. And, you know, all you have to do is sign this conservation easement. Well, when that farmer signs that conservation easement, what he just did was give away the family farm. Mm-hmm. No one will ever buy the farm if he tries to sell it because of the easement on it. I challenge people who have conservation easements to find who actually now controls that easement. There was an example of a farmer up in Pennsylvania, older gentleman in his 80s, who did such a thing. And with the money that he got from it, he decided, I'm going to build my dream house. And so he did. It wasn't in the easement that he was allowed to build that house, and that man had to stand on the front lawn of his dream house and watch the bulldozer push it over because that was a violation of his conservation easement. This is the kind of tyranny that comes from this. When the property is put on a conservation easement, and 9 times out of 10, that means that it is now either reduced in paying taxes or is not paying taxes at all.
Mm-hmm.
Well, what does that do to the county tax rolls? That means that you, the property owner who isn't in a conservation easement, now will have to pay more in taxes and to make up what's been taken off. In the county that I live in Fauquier County, Virginia, there's an organization there called the Piedmont Environmental Council, and they control about 5 counties. They're one of these green groups, and their real mission is to push these conservation easements. And what they do is they've now got 33% of the land in Fauquier County, Virginia, on conservation easements. Now, we're told this is to save the family farm. You know how many farms are on the conservation easements? 2%. The rest of it are the landed gentry, the horsey people, who have figured out a way to save on paying taxes on their land. And they just love the conservation easements. They're in power. They can control what's happening to them. But the poor farmer cannot. The other thing they get the farmer to do is sell his development rights so that he can never sell the land to you know, make any money from it. And he's given some pittance amount of money to do that. And in the end, you know, the land just literally becomes worthless. And this is what Hernando de Soto calls dead property. Dead assets, dead capital. That's, and again, step by step, this is the process that is destroying the economy of the United States. It is not helping the family farm. It is an absolute violation of property rights. The other thing that will happen to the farmer is that he will now have to do sustainable farming. Well, what does that mean? Sustainable farming is not the same thing as organic farming.
No.
A lot of people confuse that as the same thing. Sustainable farming will now tell the farmer how much energy he's allowed to use in his farming practices, what kind of crops he can grow. That's the biggie that a lot of people don't realize. They'll tell them what kind of crops they can grow. And there's a whole bunch of regulations that make it literally impossible to grow anything from that. Now, sustainable development for the whole community. You know, we've tried to come up with, you know, there's all kinds of definitions about what this means. But I've heard recently it put more succinctly than I've ever heard it before, and I'm starting to now use this. Picture your community where everything in it, all of your food, all of your building materials, all of your energy needs come only from that community. They are not imported. They are not brought from somewhere else. It is all that community. Now think about it. What does that mean to your life?
It means it's going to be regulated, controlled, and limited to the extent that the community decides collectively what is important and what is not important to provide or produce. Yeah.
And if you like bananas, forget it.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, you're not going to be, even with global warming, you're not going to get a climate to produce bananas in any sufficient quantity in this area.
But I mean, we laugh about that, but that literally is what happens. And so back in about, I think it was about 1988, if I'm not mistaken, we came across a document we weren't supposed to have. It was a HUD document. It was a draft document. Housing and Urban Development, they had created this to prepare the U.S. contribution to the Habitat II conference sponsored by the United Nations in Istanbul, Turkey. And in this, it talked about tool libraries. We thought this was very strange. What are they talking about here? You're talking about a community gathering place for all the tools you need to farm. You're talking about creating an agrarian, Chinese agrarian village.
Yeah, it's a kibbutz, if you will, an Israeli kibbutz or a Russian collective farm.
Well, yep, I like exactly. to go a little bit further back in history. It was the original plan that the Mayflower Pilgrims operated under their first year here, which was community farming, which was so disastrous, half the colony died based upon that. And William Byrd decided, this isn't working. We are going to make sure everybody has their own piece of property that they're responsible
every
for themselves.
For
and every man for himself to raise what they need, what they want, and what they want to trade.
Yeah, no more common storehouse.
Well, you see, so folks, let's not go revisit 1620 again and revisit all those bad ideas that we started with. Let's go and think about what we've achieved in this country, because it's a basic economic concept. Tom, you know this. It's the division of labor. Why are we able to get things from other communities, from other nations? Because they found a way to do it more economically, more efficiently, and in better quantities than we can do locally. It just makes sense.
But. Or there's like the bananas, there's availability of products that we don't have here. We can't That's grow right. them here. People learn to like them, and so now there's a market for them. That's what you do. You create markets, you trade. There's nothing wrong with that. There's nothing wrong with trading back and forth in other countries and so forth. No problem with that. But what we're talking about here is a total top-down control. And the fact of the matter is, with this kind of a situation where everything in your community has to come from that community, you're talking about shortages, sacrifices, higher prices, and you cannot possibly feed all the people that way. Picture New York City with this situation. What's going to happen is the 100 miles surrounding New York City is going to be used to suck clean to feed New York City. And the people who live out in those rural areas will have no ability to live out there.
Well, New Jersey used to be called, the nickname of the state is the Garden State. And the reason was that it fed New York. Now, I'm not so sure that New Jersey can do that anymore, because now it's really an industrial, heavily industrialized area. And I see what you mean. I mean, you could very easily, you could create famine with this. This is the way to create localized famines.
Absolutely true, and that's what we are already beginning to see. Food prices rise, products are not available on shelves many times. I've heard people talk about this, and you think, okay, what are they planning for? What's the future here? What do they see? Well, one sample of that, to lift the curtain and look inside, is kind, benevolent environmentalist Dr. Jacques Cousteau, who said, we must eliminate 350,000 people per day to reach sustainability. Their goal, they openly talk about this, is reducing the human population worldwide by 85%. Now, how do you do that? You know, well, starving would be one start.
I was going to say, the making the so that you can only take the things out of the local environment would be a good start.
I've heard sustainability populations of numbers like 500 million people.
Well, my question is on this. If they're so concerned about this, why don't we start with them? It always seems, and just like I talked about with yesterday,
but
about
Fred,
that boss, that they are made of better stuff than you are, so they can tell you how to live.
When I was in junior high school, the first Earth Day occurred. And I can still remember on the bulletin board, on the board, on Earth Day, what one of the teachers, a Mr. Rack, had made the statement that the pollution solution is population annihilation.
How clever.
And you know, Jay Rack was it. And my mom said, here's what you should have written. Let's start with Jay Rack. And that's exactly the point. Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah. Let's start with all the guys, all the pseudo intellects who basically have worked out all these plans. You guys should show us the way that we should sacrifice our lives in order to save the environment. Please lead the charge.
Yeah. Barbara Streisand tells us that we should stop using our washers and dryers, and we should use clotheslines outside to hang our wash out there. Someone flew over all five of her properties and couldn't find a clothesline on any one of them.
Yeah, isn't that a shame? And especially if you fly over any of our properties here in central Ohio, especially today, if you hung something out on a clothesline now, it wouldn't dry, it'd just freeze.
Yeah, I was going to say, you'd see the stiffest bed sheets you ever saw hanging from the line.
Oh, but Tom, you know, this has been moving forward for a while now. As you said, that Rio conference was in, what, 1992?
Yes.
So we've had 20 years of Agenda 21 being pressed forward through various entities, through various wings of government, all the way down to the locals, money flowing behind it. How do we get ahead of this? How do we, as somebody said, stand in front of it and put our hands up and say, stop, that far and no further?
Yeah, we over all these past 17, 18 years, as this has been put into place, we were working with ranchers, farmers, people in the timber industry who were being devastated by these policies, and we tried to tell people in the cities what was coming, what was bad about this, and so forth. It wasn't happening. They weren't seeing it. It was happening, but it was under the radar, and they weren't seeing it until the last year or so, and all of a sudden, it has become Agenda 21 is an issue that is reverberating across the country. And we are seeing a rising of people like I have never witnessed. I could, if I were working on any other issue, you know, gun control or taxes or anything like that, I have no idea what my impact is. I know exactly what our impact is on this as we've watched it step by step. We began to alert county commissioners, people in communities about the International Council for Local Environmental Initiatives, or ICLEI. ICLEI helped write Agenda 21, and then it made it its mission to go forth and multiply, to go into communities all over the world and help them implement the policies of Agenda 21 and sustainable development. They're in 1,200 cities worldwide, 600 American cities. Their goal by 2015 is 1,000 cities in America. We have literally made the name ICLEI poison now.
One thing I would point out, there are cities like Taxterville, or Westerville, for those of you who are unenlightened, who are making the claim that they are not members of ICLEI. They'll let everybody know we're not members of ICLEI, but they are taking their direction from ICLEI. Let's not kid ourselves. They've got all the agenda of ICLEI. They're just not members.
Well, ICLEI is one organization. There are thousands of them.
Yeah.
And ICLEI partners with a lot of these other organizations.
Right.
I really am beginning to believe that the worst organization, we picked ICLEI because it had very clear, definite ties to the United Nations, so we could show that connection. And I sometimes fear we did that job too well because people just focus on ICLEI. But one of the worst organizations in the country is the American Planning Association.
Uh-huh.
And they're in literally every American city. And they are looked upon as mainstream and reasonable, and you know, they've been around a long time. But the fact of the matter is, you read their literature, you look at their tactics, you look at what they're doing, they are absolutely heavily involved in Agenda 21 and sustainable development. So we're now turning our focus on the American Planning Association to show what they're doing. And it's getting very interesting in the battle that's growing now, as we have succeeded in getting about 54 communities in America out of ICLEI. In the same time, ICLEI, which had a goal of getting up to 1,000, has managed to get about 17 new communities. So we've got a net reduction of over 30 communities going into ICLEI. So that we looked at that as a real victory. But what we try to make people understand is that getting rid of ICLEI is just the first step. This is not the last step. It's the first step. And now what you need to do is get rid of all the programs that they put in place. What ICLEI does is it comes in with, first of all, your community pays them dues for the privilege of having ICLEI come in.
Yeah.
And then they bring in software training programs. They literally indoctrinate your community, the employees who work for the city or the county, of course, the county commissioners and so forth, to only look at sustainable policies. This means you're going to start having energy audits to look to cut back on your energy use. They're going to start putting regulations in that tell you how much energy you can use. They're going to start installing smart meters on your home to control your energy use. And, you know, they did this in Oakland, California. And they came in doing these energy audits, and the recommendations they were making to the homeowners there, new roofs, new windows, energy-efficient windows, new energy-efficient appliances, the average cost was $35,000 for each homeowner. This is insanity. And but that's how, you know, how they operate. And, you know, and again, they, when they talk about revitalizing downtown, you're going to start finding, first of all kinds of regulations on how much energy you can use. You're going to find your possibly your downtown now becomes difficult to drive down the street. They want to put bike paths through the town. They want you to ride your bikes. They don't want you to ride and drive your cars. They may be talking about light rail trains, on and on and on. This is how all this stuff is put into place. And through ICLEI, through the American Planning Association, and so forth. That's how they do it. So we've managed to get people to start to wake up to this, to begin to hear it, begin to question what's going on there. One of the ways they put these policies in place is through facilitated consensus meetings. Now, they will tell you, we're having an open meeting so the people can come in and discuss it. There's no discussion, there's no debate, and there's no vote. You have a trained facilitator. He's professionally trained to use psychology on the people in that meeting to lead them in a certain direction, knowing full well what the outcome is to be from that. And when he leads them to that, if he's done his job really well, everybody in the audience thinks it was all their idea. And look at that, we all helped participate in this. That's not true. They have been facilitated. So,
Well, I think that maybe our listeners, folks, if you think carefully, you've probably been in one of those facilitated meetings, because it's not just on environmental or community issues. It's done at the school level.
School boards are infamous for bringing in facilitators who basically steer you to believe that you need a property tax increase when you went in knowing full well you couldn't possibly pay any more tax. You come out saying, now how did I come to the conclusion that I need to pay more taxes? Well, if that happened to you, you were facilitated into that. Well, it's a psychological manipulation technique, and these people are trained to do it.
And there's a way to break that as well, and that is, you've got to be committed to being the skunk at the garden party. You've got to be committed to your position and be ready to stand up and to ask the questions, why? Or
Where are you people?
Where's your data?
Or when you get broken up into a work group and said you're given two choices on a thing. You come up with a thing on this and you come up with a thing on this. No, thank you. Our group's going to work on a third choice, and that's no more taxes, and we renegotiate contracts with teachers and administrators. Well, and what you'll find is, I know, Tom, you've run into this because you and I have talked about this. Suddenly you find facilitators who say, you're not coming to the correct conclusion. I'm stopping this meeting.
Yeah, you haven't reached the right. You've reached the wrong consensus.
Yes, exactly.
Well, actually said.
And I'm glad you actually used the term consensus because, you know, folks, what we try to do in this program is a little education as well. What Tom's talking about when he uses the term consensus in this facilitation is what's called the Hegelian dialectic. It's where you basically take where you stand on a principle and say property rights should be protected. Then they come in with this facilitated meeting with the agenda, with the preset notion that everybody has a part of your property rights, because it's all about this diversity in the community
and
where we're all one big happy family. That's called yours is called the thesis, theirs is called the antithesis, and the goal of the facilitator is to get you to dialogue to consensus, so that what happens is you've come off your thesis, but you'll find if you stop and think about it long enough after all of the quote-unquote decisions have been made, they didn't come off their antithesis. They just got you to go along with it by psychological manipulation, by groupthink, by putting you in a position where you felt like you are the skunk in the garden party. Now, you know what? Wear the label proudly. You know what? Skunks are important to the ecology. We need it badly.
Yeah. And they will write legislation and regulations that will give lip service to we need to protect private property rights. But
it's always the big but. Yeah.
So Tom, you've been successful. Now if we've got listeners on here, and I'm sure some of our listeners may be local officials. We may have township trustees or county commissioners or folks who are sitting there, and they're sitting there in a daze because they're sitting here understanding and realizing, wait a minute, we passed that 6 months ago or a year ago, or they came into our community last fall, and we've now changed our entire direction to go this way. What do I do? How do I combat this?
Yeah. First of all, we have now, for the first time, have county commissioners, city councilmen, state legislators coming to us and asking and talking. I am now meeting with them everywhere I go to speak, and some of them are coming up with solutions. One of the most astounding ones was a county commissioner in Bonner County, Idaho, Cornell Razor. I went up there to speak, and then somebody said, well, the county commissioner wants to have dinner with you before you speak. And I said, well, hey, I got to eat. Okay. You know,
and see, so paying? Yeah.
I go in, and we're not just sitting in a booth in a restaurant. He has a room reserved at the back of the restaurant with eight different people in there, including the county attorney is there. And they roll out this whole presentation to me of how they are fighting back. He has created what he calls a property rights council. The job and make it official part of the county government. And he succeeded in doing this. He now has a full-time employee who oversees the county, the Property Rights Council, and they get appointed people on it, one of those boards, but their job is to look at all the legislation that comes before the county commissioners and determine if it violates private property rights or not. And the other thing that it does, if you as a regular citizen go in and say, hey, county commissioners, this regulation you just came up with damages my private property, my rights, or whatever the case may be, what will happen is the NGO groups will surround your county commissioners with all kinds of official reports from PhDs and organizations and all that to show why you, the poor little citizen, is dead wrong. And for the county commissioners, they're just overwhelmed by this. Now, under the Property Rights Council, there is a network of free market organizations, think tanks, in every single state. And he has hooked into that network. And so now when you, the individual, goes in and makes your comment, and the other side begins to put all these official reports together, we level the playing field, because now here are a whole bunch of free market reports that are coming from very legitimate organizations to support your position. And so those two approaches, I mean, nothing is the silver bullet to everything, but this finally levels the playing field, and it forces the county to determine this regulation, does it violate your private property rights or not? And they are using I ask them, what is the basis for your definition of private property rights? And John Locke is the answer.
Now, let me ask you, is the American Policy Center, are you working with these groups? And if so, what kind of training or what kind of materials are available through American Policy? Or can you steer us in the right direction to get to some of these materials?
This is very new. I mean, we had once I learned about this, and it's Bonner County, Idaho. It's this little tiny county in Idaho, and that's where it exists. And so I made mention of it as I go around the country speaking. I put out a little report every once in a while to say what I've been doing, and I mentioned this thing. And some activists in Tennessee grabbed hold of this lady by the name of Karen Bracken, grabbed a hold of this. She calls the county attorney there, Scott Bauer. And she was on the phone with them over several calls, about 12 hours, getting all the details. How does this, what do I do? How do I do this? She starts spreading it across the country. Next thing I know, I'm on a national conference call with Tea Party leaders across the country.
Uh-huh.
And Scott's on there as well. And we're teaching them. And we're getting ready to put together a webinar to teach a lot of this stuff on how to fight back. Because the interesting thing is happening is we're beginning to score these victories. The American Planning Association and ICLEI are going nuts. And so the American Planning Association has now created what they call a boot camp to train their people and county officials and so forth how to counter us. So we're about to start training our people how to counter them countering us.
Counterinsurgency.
The thing is, the war is on. You know, Gandhi said that first they ignore you, then they ridicule you, then they fight you, then we win. We are at stage three. They have stopped ridiculing us. It's not working. They've tried to tell everybody we're just a bunch of conspiracy theorists with tinfoil hats. It's not working. We're getting stronger every day. We've got state legislatures. The state legislature of Wisconsin has a bill that has passed the House on the way to the Senate that will take away all of the regulations that county commissioners have to do, comprehensive planning. It also takes away the grant money to pay for it. That's on its way to the Senate. The state of Florida has passed such legislation, and the governor has signed it. In the state of New Hampshire, they have put two bills together there. I've had the privilege of talking to both these legislators in up there on this. One of them is a bill to make it illegal for a state or local government to put any money, dues, or anything else into ICLEI. The other one says,
wow,
this is the one,
Ickley,
yeah, this is the one that got my attention. The second one, there, if they can pass it, and they've already passed this one in the state house by a wide margin. In it says, if a government agent, a federal, state, or local government agent wants to come on your property, he has to first get written permission from you. That's a legislation that is in New Hampshire. We are taking this information and trying to spread it across the country. I wrote to a good friend of mine, Representative Matt Shea in Washington State, about this. He wrote me back and said, we're already working on it. So these ideas
are
spreading.
Did you say this was in Wisconsin?
It was in New Hampshire.
New Hampshire.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, I was interested when you mentioned Wisconsin because, you know, the political history of Wisconsin is such that it was a progressive center for decades. Robert La Follette and the whole ultra-left Republican Party movement in the early part of the 20th century. And it really, all of a sudden, Wisconsin is sort of snapped out of it and has, you know, moved over to, okay, what have we been doing wrong?
You can only take socialism so far before people start to wake up to it. Yeah,
yeah. I think it's the point where they've spent all your money.
Yeah,
that's the point when
that's Margaret Thatcher, right?
That's right.
This only works
as long as
there's other people's money to spend.
That's right.
Yeah,
that's right.
But you say that the ridicule phase is over, but I know that you just got interviewed for the New York Times. You told me this, so.
Well, it's not over. We're slopping into the next phase.
Yeah, I get you.
They're trying hard to ridicule us and make us look silly and so forth, but it's not working. But the New York Times last week published an article. I was interviewed by the...
Interviewed in quotes, sort of.
Yeah, it was like a 25-minute interview.
Interrogate and interview, and, it all sounds the same.
Well, as soon as I open my mouth, she comes right back and says, well, we've got to protect the environment. And I just went,
here we go again.
In truth, now what the article did, it was a front page article, and the gist of the article was, here are all of these serious, hardworking planners who are just trying to do their job, and all these darn protesters are just wasting their time. Oh my. That was the whole gist of the article. But the article had been delayed. She told me it was delayed by a week, and I grabbed hold of it and I said, you know what? I've done you a disservice because I haven't given you information you should have. This is a civil rights issue, if you want to put it in the old terms. I wrote her a long email and I said, you know, the New York Times won Pulitzer Prizes for articles that they did exposing the civil rights violations back in the 60s when that whole movement was getting started, the poor in Appalachia. I said, in each of these cases, this was depicting government oppression of people. And I said, this is the same issue, and I can give you victims, people who are losing their livelihoods. I can connect you with county, with elected officials and so forth. We can put all this together. And I said, we could do something great in the tradition of the New York Times of the past. And her response was, we've already talked to a lot of people about this article. I just need you to check these facts to see if they're correct.
And how many of the facts that you were sent were correct?
I had told her in my discussion, she asked me for examples. And I was talking about smart meters. And I said, I just got a report that in Naperville, Illinois, they were attempting to install these smart meters. And 16 residents stood up and said, no, not on my house. And the government in Naperville, the city government, responded by sending police escorts out with the installers. Now, you talk about a police state, you know, on these people's property. Do you know how that was interpreted? That whole story, how it came out in the original before I did the fact checking on the New York Times article. She said, quote, Tom DeWeese, head of a one-man think tank in Naperville, Illinois. That is all she got from it. And I wrote back and I said, A, I'm in Warrenton, Virginia, not Naperville, Illinois. She completely missed the story of the tyranny. And I said, I'm not a one-man think tank. I've got 50,000 supporters around the country. So.
Well, it's sort of an expose on the state of modern print journalism.
It's pathetic.
It is. The New York Times has been pathetic for a long time, and in fact, you know, the we used to laugh about the fact that it was called the quote unquote newspaper of record. Well, if you want all your records wrong, then go to the New York Times.
Well, the interesting thing is, they told me that the gist of the story, the focus of the story, was why the anger? Why are people rising up against sustainable development, the growing opposition to Sustainable Development Agenda 21? I was trying to address that. I was trying to show her that you've got people, you've got farmers now who are having their products, you know, doing unprocessed milk. The FDA is sending in SWAT teams, taking it away from them. I have met on several occasions where I was speaking a lady who owned a very prominent cheese company in the state of Washington, and they used unprocessed milk to make the cheese. It was in restaurants all over America. They were very successful. A FDA SWAT team literally came into their property, confiscated the cheese, locked it up. They weren't even allowed to feed it to their pigs as it rotted. Not allowed to make any more, weren't allowed to earn a living. There had never been a single complaint, never had been a single record of anyone getting sick from this, and they'd give them no reason why they did this.
Apparently, they're unaware that you make cheese with mold.
Yeah, right.
So,
well, another example was a guy who was a beekeeper, and they swarmed in on him, and they said, you cannot do this on this property because having livestock on this property is illegal. They deemed the bees livestock. So you have this kind of tyranny going on across the country. For what reason? Because they want to control the food supply. It's all part of the Agenda 21 plan. And if you're not doing it the way they want it done, they will shut it down. And so this is what we're trying to show. I could have shown her all of these kinds of tyrannical actions by our government, and they didn't want to hear it.
Well, because it does, you know, the motto of the New York Times is all the news that's fit to print, but it really is all the news that fits our agenda. And the fact is that they are part of the environmental agenda.
Sure. Their purpose in that article was to help lead the fight to put down our movement, which is starting to have so much success now, and they needed to go after it and cut off the head. That was what their job
was. Well, the question really is kind of stupid. Why all the anger over these intrusions on property rights? Hello, it's because people are buying property and paying taxes and not being allowed to use their property. I mean, the answer is self-evident, but
they didn't want to report that. They didn't want to tell that.
Well, the presupposition is that these people would, why, of course they'd want to quote unquote help the environment more than they'd want to be able to use their property. That should be the overriding concern. And in fact, I'll bet that reporter, if she's been outside of New York City any time in the last 5 years, I'd be really shocked.
Yeah.
Unless the paper sent her on assignment, and the first thing she wanted to do was hurry right back and get inside her little apartment in New York City.
She had no clue what we were talking about.
No, yeah. Of course not. She's never, basically, I would be willing to bet. Now, I could be completely wrong. She may be an outdoorsy type. I don't know. Yeah. She may run off to northern Maine.
I do think, too, it was her first reaction when I wrote her that email with these ideas was great, and then she said, but I've got to move on. I think her editors were the ones who weren't going to let
her
go in that direction.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's where it came from. But, you know, the other thing is, of course, that for years they've called us the AstroTurf crowd, that we want to pave the earth. I go on radio interviews, I hear this a lot, you know, attacks like that. What I find hysterical about this is you look at their solutions, their so-called environmental solutions. Let's just take windmills, for example. First of all, to create the windmill, and to transport it and to erect it and its whole transportation system with it would take probably more energy than that windmill will ever produce in its lifetime. That's the first thing. The second thing is they call us the AstroTurf crowd, and we want to pave the Earth. Just to make up the energy shortage in the state of California using wind power would take an area the size of Connecticut to do that with a forest of windmills. Who wants to pave the Earth? You know, I want to put together a nuclear plant that takes about 3 acres. They want to take the entire state of Connecticut just to make up a shortage for California, let alone enough power for the rest of the country. And, you know, there is a great consternation in the environmental movement over these things because the Audubon Society calls them Cuisinarts in the air. They are killing
lots
of birds. Here we've got the Endangered Species Act, which is another massive attack on private property. And, you know, if a guy has done something that hasn't, you know, right, that he has an endangered species on his land, let him do it. He's done something right. Now, instead, he loses his property.
But Tom, I'm sure that when the big energy companies went to Congress to, number one, to get their stimulus money, but number two, to get the laws written so that they can put up these Cuisinarts in the air, they also wrote in a little provision that said that they were probably immune from the provisions of the Migratory Waterfowl Protection Act.
Absolutely.
And other things that you and I, if we put up a, let's say we had an old farm and we put up a windmill there to help, you know, like pump water out of our wells. Yeah. Boy, I'll tell you what, if a Canadian goose happened to get on the wrong end of that blade, we would be going to jail for an awfully long time and facing lots of fines. But I can almost guarantee you, if we go look at the legislation,
no question about it,
that authorized that there are provisions in there that gives them total exemption from any legal
issue. The birds are dying.
Their birds are dying.
Were we
That's right.
not concerned about protecting the birds? That's what the environmental movement said. But when you start looking at all these policies, you find out that most times the environmental quote unquote solution is more damaging to the environment. Who knows better how to take care of the environment than a farmer? He has to take care of it, or he's out of business.
And that's part of the whole thing behind even Hernando de Soto. If you want environmentally friendly policies, then make it private property. Because the Soviet Union proved that when land is collectively owned, it's also collectively maltreated.
Exactly.
Destroy the economy. You know, you're reduced now to one decision: survival. Do you care whether that tree stands in the yard or not, or do you need firewood? Do you care about protecting these animals over here? Do you need dinner? That's what happens when you destroy the economy, and the only decision that free men can make is survival.
And that's what it could get down to. Tom, I want to kind of not change direction here, but I want to ask you, because this is a question that's kind of been bugging me in the back of my head with all this. It's easy to understand the attacks that are coming against you from the left, from the New York Times, from Sierra Club, from the Nature Conservancy. Let me ask you, what have you been seeing from what we would consider, quote unquote, the right in this country, or the conservative organizations that might have a pony in this race?
Excellent question.
Because it's been bugging me ever since we started talking about this, that you've got to think that because of the amount of money, control, and power, that the temptation is going to be incredibly great, and some of them are going to be irresistible to some even conservative groups to get on the sustainability train.
Yeah. What we have found over the last 18 years as we've been doing this is you have groups like Reason Foundation.
Right, which is libertarian.
Libertarian, and Cato, and the Heritage Foundation. They will talk about cap and trade. They will talk about global warming. They've done some great work, fighting the global warming issue. And they'll even talk about smart growth, which is one of the tenets of Agenda 21 in the communities. They never will mention Agenda 21. They never will talk about the United Nations. And I've gotten it to the point of going to meetings in D.C. and saying, why? Why won't you talk about these things? And
the skunk in the garden party. Yeah, okay, gotcha.
And I have, you know, I've gotten so many different answers. And one of the answers was, well, if we start talking about the UN, then that means we're rubbing shoulders with the John Birch Society, so we don't want to do that.
That's one
of the answers I got. My speculation is that they are taking corporate donations. And to talk about Agenda 21 legitimately, one of the three tenets of Agenda 21 are public-private partnerships. That is a government-sanctioned monopoly. That is a company that is in cahoots with the government in some manner. They get tax breaks. They get special privileges, whatever the case may be. They get a chance to develop land that people outside of the partnership can't. They get non-compete clauses. You know, the Reason Foundation was huge in pushing the Trans-Texas Corridor, which was a public-private partnership, and they told me there are no non-compete clauses in this contract. None of those things you're saying are true. Well, we checked the contract out and found about 15 of them.
That's the project that erstwhile presidential candidate Rick Perry came out and canceled after he'd insisted for 2 years that the project didn't exist.
And the only reason he canceled it was because of he was blocked.
That's
by
right.
The coordination process that my friends at the American Stewards of Liberty put together, where local communities, the state was required to deal with them. It was going through their community. And three communities rose up and said, you got to work with us on this, and we're not going to let this thing go through. It's going to cut our county in two. And so they tried to go around it. And they ended up getting five more counties to stand. So it was checkmate. You can't get around us. And that's when they finally said, no, we're going to do it. When the state legislature passed a law to repeal the Trans-Texas Corridor, because that's what the people wanted, Rick Perry would not stop pushing it. He was ignoring that legislation and continuing on with it. The only reason it ever stopped was because they could not get it through the coordination process.
Well, we had a good laugh on our blog site when I wrote an article that basically said, how do you cancel a project that doesn't exist? And that kind of nonsense goes on all over the place. Sure. And I think Oklahoma also had something to do with that, because they basically said, not in our state.
That's right. We'll not cross our border. Randy Brogdon down there, state senator down there, said that. Yeah. And the other thing, what you're pointing out here is exactly what we're up against with Agenda 21. Doesn't exist, don't know what you're talking about. Well, you know what? In June of this year, there's going to be a meeting, another UN meeting called Rio Plus 20. Mm-hmm. This is where all of the forces on Earth are going to converge to celebrate what they did, creating Agenda 21 in 1992, and now they're going to do everything they can to bolster it, to move forward with it, to give it more strength, get more international leaders to sign on to it. But, you know, it all comes down to the scene in The Wizard of Oz, pay no attention to that man behind the curtain. It doesn't exist. It doesn't, you know, we're not doing this. Tom DeWeese is crazy. I'm only quoting them. I that's it. I don't have the imagination to come up with this garbage on my own. I'm just quoting what they're doing. But every time I do, they're all, you're crazy. I was speaking in Lincoln, Nebraska last summer, and there was somebody there assigned by the mayor to come in and hear me speak. And as soon as I was done, his hand goes up, and he says, I'm hearing extremism here. And I said, okay, go back and tell your handlers you were a good little boy. You came here to label me an extremist, and now you've done it. Go away.
And they leave.
What was it that Barry Goldwater used to say? Extremism in the defense of liberty is no vice.
That's right.
Now, but okay, go ahead.
You had told me that you've got some kind of a project coming up for helping to train people to deal with some of these issues. And I want to hear more about that, because I was curious then and I'm curious now if you're ready to announce.
My job this week is to begin to put the promotional pieces together so that people know about it. We have created a Stop Agenda 21 action kit. And in this kit, there are four manuals. There is one that deals with all the details. It tells the history, where all this came from. It goes through all the different aspects of it and what they are, conservation easements and comprehensive development plans and so forth. And it even talks about sustainable health care. If you go on the internet, you will find about 8 million references or 5 million references to sustainable health care. And
better known as Obamacare.
Exactly. That's all the tenets of that.
Yeah.
And so you'll see what that's all about. So we cover that. We cover education, what's happening in the curriculum in schools and so forth. And we've got a manual on coordination is in it. We have a manual on the victims of these kind of policies and what's happening with them. And because they're always saying to us, well, who's a victim of this? I haven't heard anybody suffer from any of these. We hear that, too. And it also has a workbook in it that has documents that you can, first of all, the purpose of the workbook is to show you how to fight back. I have a whole report in there on property rights councils. I have a report that I put out before on how to fight back, how to stand up to ICLEI, how to counter things. It also has a manual by Beverly Ekman in it that how to stop these group manipulation meetings, consensus meetings. It has her manual. It also has a DVD set in it, a presentation by me, by Michael Kaufman on smart growth, on by Michael Chapman, who really ties all the education issues together, to the curriculum and how they what they're doing to the kids in the classroom to indoctrinate into this, and Don Casey from Alabama. We've got a presentation by him. It really goes through a lot of the sustainable farming issues and so forth. It has two workshops in it on DVD. It has a Dan Byfield from the American Stewards of Liberty doing on coordination, and Bev Aikman doing one on the
facilitated.
And it's got a 14-minute PowerPoint presentation in it designed for elected officials to get their, you know, keep their attention at least that long to show them what this is all about. So it's got, what I did was I went out to activists across the country and said, what do you need? And I've done my level best to pull it all together in one kit and give them what they need. So it is now ready to go. We'll get it up on the website here shortly.
Excellent.
So,
excellent.
Stop Agenda 21 Action Kit. Yeah. And then we're going to follow that with a webinar to teach people how to stand up to, I mentioned the American Planning Association having their boot camps on how to counter us. Well, so are we. So we're going to do that very shortly.
Good. And I know you're coming out to Camp American. So if you or you want your children or to educate yourself on some of these issues, come on out to Camp American this year. Tom's coming out and he's going to give a talk. At least one talk, I'm sure.
Usually about three.
Yeah, usually at least three. And they're always informative. In fact, we've got DVDs available of past Camp American talk. And I think the one you did on the Emerging Surveillance Society is one of the most interesting things. It's prescient. I mean, basically, you're predicting the things that are happening now. And I think we made that 2 years ago.
Two or three years ago.
The things we're seeing with this whole airport security and these guys just being completely out of control and all that kind of stuff. And now all of a sudden we have, as we talked about this last week, Predator drones and the FAA Reauthorization Act having funding in there for surveillance drones so that they can send them all over the place. And Ohio, actually, the Ohio legislature actually attempting to have Ohio made into one of the places where these things get tested out.
Yeah, golly, count us in. We want to be involved in that.
They do because, you know, obviously with Wright-Patterson Air Force Base, they're looking at it's another way in order to justify keeping the base open by saying we're going to test out this, putting these unmanned aircraft into commercial air traffic zones and see how it all works out. Now, I'm not sure about you, Tom, and I know a lot of people don't like to fly because of the TSA. That hasn't concerned me as much, but when you start putting unmanned aircraft that are remote controlled in the same airspace with the passenger jet that I may happen to be on, I'm a little concerned about that.
Yeah.
Just from a personal standpoint.
I'm really thinking the guy sitting 200 miles away in a control booth flying the thing may not have the same concern for my life that a piloted plane might have when he sees me 100 yards away and does a quick dive.
Exactly.
Well, what I'm concerned about is what they use them for. And, you know, we already have government agents secretly coming on people's property and seeing what they're doing on the property and finding violations in environmental violations, and they're going to start using it more and more that way. I mean, what else are they going to use them for? I doubt that they're going to fly down Broad Street and kind of start looking at drug deals. I mean, they're not concerned about that.
No.
So, you know, they're going to go in my backyard and see what I'm doing, and that's
exactly my concern. It's essentially it's an open violation of the Fourth Amendment.
Sure.
It's essentially it's executing a search warrant without having one.
And, exactly.
And that is becoming, of course, the Fourth Amendment was thrown out the window with the Patriot Act. And it's now the ring is starting to close with the NDAA and this Enemy Expatriation Act. Oh my gosh, you're doing this in your backyard. Well, that is an expatriating act. We're going to haul you off to Guantanamo.
Well, the EPA the EPA already has grant programs to teach people how to spy on their neighbors and report them for environmental violations. So that already exists.
Well, you know what? Spy all you want to on me. I'm paying the mortgage on the property. I'm paying the taxes on it. And I'm going to do basically what I decide is best for my family and my property.
Until the SWAT team arrives.
And let them arrive. That's fine. you know, it's like, okay, fine. Let's go ahead and just have it out right
now.
How
dare you have a barbecue in your backyard?
Yeah, right? How dare I have a barbecue? Well, I've got a burn pile in my backyard, so they hate me even more.
Helping the ozone hole.
And I don't mind burning tires either. So let's just put it out there, okay? I am the anti-environmentalist your mother warned you about. No, but Tom, you know, I want to thank you very much for everything that you've been doing. I know that oftentimes it goes unheralded. Oftentimes, just like as we see, you kind of sit there and think, has the world gone crazy? Do they not see this? Is it not a concern for them? But we find, as more education gets out there, as more information is put forward in a comprehensible way, and I love this idea of the action kit, mm-hmm. that people say, yeah, I had a concern, I just didn't know what to do about it.
Sure.
And I didn't realize that anybody else had the same concern. I thought I was all alone out here. I was on my own island. Then they realize the island's a little bit bigger and it's a peninsula, and then they realize, well, no, it's more than that.
It's a whole country.
It's a whole continent. And if we don't start soon, that whole continent's going to be dead land because, yeah, we didn't even get into and we didn't have time for the United Nations and their biodiversity treaties and
it's all part of the same agenda.
And the Heritage Rivers program and the biospheres and all of the other things that are already taking place in this country and, ladies and gentlemen, here in Ohio. I mean, our current governor we've now privatized the Department of Development and calling it Jobs Ohio, and we've been touting for the last 2 years public-private partnerships. As a means for economic
government
development.
Sanctioned monopolies.
Government sanctioned monopolies.
Also known as fascism.
Fascism, that's right. And we're going that direction faster than I think most of us expected it to start going.
Yeah.
But Tom, again, you've been there, you've been in the trenches 43 years, and you look young and vibrant. You look like you're going to be in there probably at least for another decade or two, hopefully. But ladies and gentlemen, the point is he's going to need help to do this. And the ways you can help is get yourself educated. Go to the American Policy Center website at AmericanPolicy.org. Sign up. Become a member. Help in the fight. $10 a month isn't much to ask to try to preserve your liberties and your property rights. Sign up for the Sledgehammer. Go to the DeWeese Report, DeWeeseReport.com. Sign up for the DeWeese Report. I mean, I'll tell you what, it's some of the most hard-hitting, factual information you're going to get out there to clear away the smoke and the mirrors that the government and all of these environmental movement types have been putting out there and that you have been buying without even realizing it.
And the book, Now Tell Me I Was Wrong, is a collection of articles I wrote over the last 15 years. You mentioned the biodiversity and all that. It's all in there. It covers education. It covers the environmental movement. It covers the UN. It covers Agenda 21. It covers the surveillance society, illegal immigration. It's all in there, things I wrote over those years. And I was derided for it or ignored.
Yes.
And then people want to know why the Tea Party movement, why the anger, why are people standing up? This was the beginning of that. This is what was creating that. And so you want to see that history. You want to see, I name names. You can follow it through. So it's available on Amazon.
And it's available on our Amazon store. I put it up months ago.
Yes,
so we've
now,
got it available.
I'll tell you what. I read the book. I've got a copy. I've read the book. If you're easily depressive, be very careful with this book because it may send you into a tailspin because all the stuff that he saw 15 years ago is happening right now. But the point is, we're sitting here talking to the antidepressant. Tom DeWeese and the American Policy Center is your antidepressant.
I've never been more energized in my life.
Because they now have got it put together, a packet of how you can get engaged, how you can fight back, and are starting to build a track record of winning against this juggernaut. Mm-hmm. Ladies and gentlemen, I can't commend enough Tom and the American Policy Center. Get out there. Get to his website. Get engaged, and while you're at it, tithe a little. You know, $10 a month, $15 a month isn't going to hurt anybody. Honestly, if you have to, that's foregoing one happy meal per week, I think, is what it gets down to. And also, you know, and I'm going to make a plug, you know, because the Institute for Principled Policy, you know, we're a nonprofit as well, and we would love to have your support if you're willing to give it to us. Now, Tom, I think APC is a 501c4
Four.
Yes. Mm-hmm. So neither the Policy Center nor the Institute for Principal Policy is going to be a place where you're going to get a tax deduction for giving your money. But the point is, that's how we got in this mess in the first place, is we're going to give you tax breaks in order to take away your liberty. That's what government does. That's what these whole things with conservation easements and all these other things have been these trade-offs of, we'll stop taking your money from you, but we'll take your freedom. We don't do it that way. We would like to have your investment, and we're going to give you back tools that you can use to protect your freedom. So get on that website. Yeah, get a hold of Tom. If you're in a local Tea Party group or a church group or anything else, your folks need to hear about this. Drop Tom an email and invite him to come and speak. I mean, he comes, even though he lives in Virginia, he does come back to Ohio frequently. So, and he's loving it. As a matter of fact, as we tape this today, you're going to be tonight in Mansfield to the Mansfield Tea Party group about this issue. So,
yeah, unfortunately, it's too late. By the time this airs, Tom will be back in Virginia.
We'll probably be back in Virginia. But the point is that get a hold of him, get engaged, become a part of the solution.
And with that, we are out of time. Thank you for being with us today. And please contact Tom at AmericanPolicy.org. Join us Monday for another Principles and Policies.